Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, July 16th. Oh, boy. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital Medical Group, the multi-specialty practice of Saratoga Hospital with 27 specialty practices and more than 170 providers taking care of their community. SaratogaHospital.org for more. Joining us on this Medical Monday is a very good friend of mine, Dr. Robert Sachs. He's an ophthalmologist, retinal specialist, and director of retinal services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region. He's here to answer your questions about eye care and treatment. Call us at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You want to know about your eyes? Today's the day. Dr. Sachs and your calls all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Well, hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WZ's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. Dr. Sachs is a retinal specialist, has been director of retina services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region since 1989. He specializes in macular degeneration, retinal vein disease, and diabetic retinopathy. Dr. Sachs earned his medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. He is board certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology and is a member of several professional societies, including the New York Ophthalmological Society and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Dr. Sachs, Bob Sachs, welcome to the Medical Monday.
Thank you, Alan.
And thanks, as always, for being with us. To be part of conversation, everybody, and we're going to have a lot of calls. They're already coming in. Get in line, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet us, but don't do that, or email us at voxpop@voxpop.org. So now it's your turn, and we'd love to hear from you. Hey, are things getting worse with the eyes, and is there any reason for it?
Well, there's been an interesting set of articles recently about the increasing incidence of nearsightedness, myopia, in people.
Meaning not being able to see far away.
Yeah, and they think it has to do with a lot of the close work that kids do. In other words, rather than play outside and look at a distance, they're doing a lot of up close. And so they're following patterns in some of the Asian countries where a huge population is developing nearsightedness over the course of time.
Okay. And how do you fix that?
Well, that's the point. They're not really sure, but it may well be that getting away from screens and getting into, spending more time seeing things at a distance is going to be helpful in the development of the eye. This is not something that adults will happen to adults, but kids develop more nearsightedness.
Okay.
Apparently with that kind of close work.
Thanks, Bob. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim in Matamoros, you're on.
I lost eyes down in that burn. I tried to look at a church steeple about a half a mile away. The top third seems to disappear, where with the right eye or both eyes together, you can see the top. I was wondering if that might be an early cataract coming.
Well, loss of a part of your visual field can be any of a number of things and should certainly be investigated by you seeing an ophthalmologist to have that looked at. If you think of the eye as a camera, you've got lenses, you've got film. It's actually more complicated than that because the camera of the eye is connected to the brain, which does the actual seeing. The eye just sends the information. And so if you have damage to any of the parts of the eye or problems with the optic nerve that carries the information from the eye to the brain or in the brain itself where the information, as I said, is interpreted, could cause you to have a problem with seeing a part of the visual field. So I would certainly have this investigated. But a cataract is a possibility, but other things need to be ruled out.
How old are you, Jim, anyway?
75.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. All right, let's go to Thea in Alford. I want to remind everybody, this is the time to get your questions answered. If you've got eye difficulties of any kind, we have one of the great experts here. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Go to Thea in Alford. Hiya, Thea in Alford.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I did a few things that affected my right eye. I banged my head in the edge of a kitchen cabinet door that was open. A bird's nest fell on my face and got in my eye. And also when I was cooking, some hot oil splattered and got in my eye. After all those things, I had an incident where my vision broke up. I had a bunch of 3D weird lined hallucinations in that eye. I went to the eye doctor. He gave me a thorough exam and seemed to think it was floaters. And that was a couple of months ago. I happened to take antibiotics for something else since then, and it seemed to cause a slight improvement in some of the symptoms in my right eye. And I am left with a constant sense that I have something in my eye, like a little gravelly thing, and I still have floaters on occasion, not breakup hallucinations and 3D stuff, but just some moving films of blurry vision.
It sounds like okay,
Thea, we're going to take it from there. Go ahead.
It sounds like you've got a number of things going on. The blow to the head is something that I'm glad you went to a doctor to have somebody look at. Sometimes you can loosen up the natural gel fluid in the eye that would have loosened anyway, but you may have advanced that, and that can cause the floaters. But you also have to be checked to make sure that the retina, the wall of the eye, wasn't damaged, and that there was no bleeding in the eye. So hopefully that was done. Getting stuff in your eye, like a piece of a bird's nest, I mean, that's got a lot of germs on it and such, and you have to make sure, of course, that none of those pieces were, you know, lodged under the eyelid and continue to irritate. But it sounds like your eyes may also be dry and irritated and may need attention in that department. I would certainly follow up with your ophthalmologist to make sure that all these things are taken care of and tell him the stories that you've told us today so that he can investigate all the different possibilities.
Thank you, Thea. Okay, now let's go to Kimberly in Pittsfield. All right, Kimberly, you're on.
Yes, I'm just wondering perhaps why I have double vision. It's just come along the last, I'd say, couple of months. I did have Lyme disease. I had Bell's palsy on the left side of my face. And if I close my left eye, then I don't have the double vision. And that's where I had the Bell's palsy.
Right. Double vision that comes on in adulthood, there's many different causes for it. You mentioned Lyme disease, which can have a neurologic component. It can affect the nerves that affect the movement of the eye. Other things that can occur, of course, you have to think about a mini stroke, other things that might affect the way that the eye is controlled by the brain. As well as things that can affect the actual eyeball itself. So these are all things that need to be investigated. And again, I'm going to ask you to follow up with your ophthalmologist to have that checked. Sometimes there's a weakness in the muscles that hold the eye in position, and that can change as you get older, and that can also be affected and helped by prism glasses. But you have to rule out an organic form, something that might have affected the brain or the eye itself. So
what is a prism?
Prism glasses use the fact, if you ever looked at a prism, which is basically a triangle of glass or of plastic, it changes the angle that the eye would see something. So if you put a prism in front of your eye, it makes the image offset. And if the eyes are not aligned appropriately, you can have glasses made with some prism component to them that restabilizes or realigns the visual image so that the eyes work together instead of separately.
Yeah. I understand that.
Okay, thank you. All right, that was Kimberly. Now let us go to take a break. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. And we are back. Let's go to Bill in Pittsfield. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for the doctor. I'm a 65-year-old male, and I had a detached retina about a year or two ago and in my right eye, and now I seem to be developing cataracts in that eye. So my doctor's recommending some cataract surgery to remove the cataract. The complication or question I have is that he said he can fix the right eye to match the left eye if I'm not going to have the left eye done, or he can make the right eye better than the left eye, thinking that in the future I might not need glasses, but to do that I might have some sort of visual disturbances like depth perception. So I'm just not sure what the correct way to go about doing this is, since the left eye is good and doesn't need anything emergently.
Right. I'm sorry you had problems with the retinal detachment. I'm hoping that the vision was improved by the surgery.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Okay.
It's good.
All right. And then in the process of doing so, he probably did what they call a scleral buckling operation, where they put a little band of silicone around the wall of the eye to hold the retina in place. And that can increase the amount of nearsightedness you have in the eye. The other question I have is, are you nearsighted?
I've always wore glasses to see distance. And what they did for the retinal detachment is they put a bubble in the eye. And
Okay. Yeah. So my point is this. The two eyes being nearsighted, the bubbling, the vitrectomy and the air fluid exchange that they did to repair the retinal detachment in the right eye accelerates cataract growth. They probably told you that beforehand. So now you have more of a cataract in that one eye. And the question is, what do you do about balancing things back? He could remove the cataract and replace it with an implant lens that makes you see have no correction necessary for glasses at distance in that eye, but it would not merge well with the left eye. In some people who can wear contact lenses, they can get away with that by wearing a contact on the left eye. But if you're not used to that, it's kind of a stretch. And so the question is, do you have that right eye made to zero in anticipation of the left eye needing cataract surgery in the future, or do you make the right eye closer to the refractive error, the nearsightedness amount that's in the left eye? And so you can use the two eyes together. And that's the discussion you needed to have. I think you probably had that, and you have to decide how you're going to go about doing that. But you can't have the one eye corrected to zero, the right eye, with the cataract surgery, and expect to have the two eyes work well together for depth perception or whatever afterwards. They'll both see well individually, but they won't work together because the two eyes won't have the same refractive power.
So if I'm not having the left eye done soon thereafter, it'd be best to kind of probably just match the right eye to the left as best we could and continue wearing glasses.
It would give you the best depth perception. That's correct.
Okay. All right. Got to let you go. Thank you. All right. Let's go to Nancy in Ulster Park. 1-800-348-2551. Nancy in Ulster Park. Go.
Hi. I'm just really calling to put in some information. Vision rehabilitation that is funded through Medicare if a person's best corrected vision in their better seeing eye is 20/70 or worse.
Right.
Or there are, if they have a field cut.
Yes, there are programs in place that help people out who have visual limitations. That's absolutely correct. And some of that is paid for by government insurance. 20/70 is the cutoff for getting a driver's license even during daytime hours. The idea of being able to help people who have vision less than that is a good one because it keeps them doing as much as they can despite their vision limitations. So that's something.
Yeah, I just think it's much easier for people to learn how to make adjustments and use technology if their vision is 20/70 versus 20/200, which is legal blindness.
No question. And if they have a progressive eye disease, which we see a lot of, getting them involved with vision rehab, getting certain glasses and certain aids, AIDES, to help with their reading and their distance vision early on makes it easier than. You're right, then if they only move into that program at a later stage when their vision is much worse.
Thank you, Nancy. All right. And now we're on to Marjorie in Saugerties. Marjorie in Saugerties, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Marjorie. Marjorie, welcome.
Hi there. Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
I'm having difficulty hearing you. My question is, I have a long history of herniated discs in my neck. On April 25th, I had cataract surgery in my right eye. I developed cysts from that surgery, which have subsequently gone away, but my vision is blurry in that eye. I cannot read unless I enlarge the print. Is there a connection between bone spurs in the neck and blurred vision?
There's not a direct connection, assuming, of course, that these spurs aren't actually impinging on the spinal cord, but it's really not the connection. What I'm more interested in is the fact that if you had the cataract surgery, some people develop some degree of swelling in the retina afterwards, which I think is what you're referring to as the cyst. It's not it's kind of a swelling difficulty that they have, and that blurs the vision and needs to be treated over a period of time.
Correct. Well, I was treated. I'm still under treatment. And I was diagnosed with cystoid macular edema.
That's exactly what
and
I was
And I have about. Had three very thorough exams. I'm now hoping to see someone up in Albany. But since my neck hurts a lot, and it seems to be... I was just wondering if there was a connection between that pressing on something and my blurred vision.
Well, the CME is the cystoid macular edema is a cause of blurred vision after cataract surgery in some cases. There's no direct correlation between that and bone spurs, and the CME needs to be treated as apparently they've already initiated. So in time, I'm hoping that resolves and that your vision does improve.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's go to Claudia in Pittsfield. Claudia, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So, doctor, I had a vitrectomy performed on my left eye in May and have done all my follow-up. Apparently, the doctor who's treated me is happy with the healing, but I'm quite dismayed that it's as slow as it is. My central vision is poor, and it's really limiting my reading.
What was the cause of the vitrectomy? Why did you need it in the first place?
Well, I had a torn retina in the eye approximately 5 years ago and apparently had a wonderful repair, but developed a macular wrinkle.
Yes.
And that was affecting my vision, obviously.
Right. So what happens in a case like that is the tear leads to a distortion in the central retina, which which refer to as a pucker, and it's actually a change in the contour of the surface. Instead of being smooth, there's a corrugation, there's a bumpiness to it that
yes,
develops.
Correct.
And the vitrectomy was probably also included a membrane peel. Does that sound familiar?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So you try to peel off that little thin membrane that is causing the distortion, but that does take a while to heal, and sometimes the healing is incomplete. Sometimes the underlying retinal layers, which were distorted by that surface wrinkling, don't quite line up as well as they could. There are nutritional things we talk about to try to help you get those layers to start to work better, but sometimes there just isn't. It takes a while, and it's sometimes incomplete in its repair.
And Bob, what is a vitrectomy?
Vitrectomy is the removal of the vitreous gel that fills the back cavity of the eye. It's needed during development of the eye, but once you become an adult, it's not necessary. So it can be removed if it's in the way, if it develops bleeding within it, which is sometimes happens to people who have diabetes, or if it develops inflammation, it can be removed surgically. And it was really done in her case to allow access to the macular area, the central part of the retina, so that this membrane peel could be performed.
I'm not a patient person. It's not healing fast enough, and obviously it's affected. I don't drive at night anymore. I've had to retire from my job.
I'm sorry that these have occurred. I would continue speaking with your ophthalmologist and make sure that things are taken care of.
I have a follow-up very shortly, so I just wondered what your thoughts were. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Claudia. All right, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. 2551. Over to Steve in Troy. Steve in Troy, you're on.
Hi, Doc. When I was 5 years old, I had an operation to correct a wandering eye where they cut the muscle.
Yes.
And I've done okay with it, you know, corrective lenses my whole life. But now that I'm in my 50s, is there anything I can do to improve the vision in that bad eye?
Well, when you were a child, they must have they recognized that you had developed something called strabismus, which is where the eyes don't line up. And in a child, that can cause weakening of vision because the eyes, normally the brain uses the two eyes simultaneously and together. In a case where the eyes don't line up, the brain will actually kind of choose one eye or the other, and the other eye will become lazy. So in order to prevent that from developing, they try to realign your eyes, and it sounds like that worked. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, but my vision in the bad eye is very poor.
Right. So what happened was a lot of that lazy eye had developed before they came to the realization of what was happening. The problem there is that the eye itself is structurally normal, but the wiring, think of the eye as being wired to the brain through the optic nerve. The wiring never quite got laid down as properly as it should have because the brain preferred the other eye, and the weaker eye became lazy. So even years later, there's nothing we can really do to improve that situation. We haven't gotten to that point yet where we can get certain nerves and certain connections to regrow. So again, you know, if the eyes are straight and you have a good cosmetic result, that's good. But strengthening the actual vision in a lazy eye from childhood is not something that's possible these days.
Would LASIK be an option?
Not for that. LASIK merely corrects nearsightedness or astigmatism, some farsightedness, but that's a refractive thing. It wouldn't make the vision itself better. If you can't see better with glasses or contact lenses, then the LASIK won't make the vision in the eye any better. It only eliminates the need for the glasses.
Fascinating case. Thanks, Steve. All right, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And Jim from the great city of Plattsburgh. Jim, you're
hello.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Doctor. Very pleased to talk to you. I've had quite a long series of eye problems, but my biggest one now, I'm 77 years old. My biggest one now is macular edema. What's the difference between that and macular degeneration?
All right. The macula that we speak about in both these terms is the central part of the retina. If you think of the retina as the film in the camera, think of it as a bullseye target, and the bullseye itself, the central part, is the macula. That is the part where you see most accurately, where you see colors, where the letters fall when you read something. It's the most critical part of the retina. It's right at the dead center. Edema, that term means swelling. And there can be many reasons for macular edema. Macular degeneration is a more specific terminology for a condition that causes that macular area to break down or degenerate. And it's usually related to increasing age. There may be some metabolic reasoning behind this. The point is that area starts to break down, and part of the breakdown can be the development of swelling or edema. Edema can also be formed, as I mentioned, by other things. For example, people who have diabetes can get edema of the macular area. There are many other instances of things that can cause that. So macular edema is a symptom, whereas macular degeneration is a disease entity of itself that can include macular edema.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your answer.
Thank you.
You're
Jim.
Welcome.
Okay, and now we are off to see not the wizard, but John in Poughkeepsie. John in Poughkeepsie, Poughtown. You're on, John.
I have the start of early glaucoma. I also have asthma, and I take a long-term steroidal spray to control the asthma. I understand that may be affecting the glaucoma, and my question would be, of course I need the spray, should I go with a laser treatment or continue with the drops until the pressure is not controlled and then go for laser treatment?
Well, if you need the steroids for asthma, that's something that needs to be worked around. The short answer about whether or not steroids influence glaucoma is yes, they can. But they usually take time to do so. In other words, it's not, you know, one spray is going to cause a problem. It's use over time. But that needs to be followed by your ophthalmologist, who will monitor the pressure in your eye and, more importantly, monitor both the structure and the function of the optic nerve, which is what degenerates in glaucoma. The nerve shows decreased function, and there's ways we can evaluate that to determine what's going on. So, you know, you have to maintain your ability to breathe and you know, do you have your respiratory status maintained? And for that, the asthma may need to have steroids. But steroids over a shorter period of time can be monitored as an effect on glaucoma, and doesn't necessarily mean you have to stop them. You have to speak with both your pulmonologist or your internist, whoever's monitoring your steroid use, and your ophthalmologist to make sure that the glaucoma is followed on a regular basis. And then the lasers can be used in glaucoma to control pressure if they start to go up because of the use of the steroid.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
Okay, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And now we're going to go to Carlo in Western Massachusetts. Carlo, your turn.
Hi, Doc. Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Big fan, Alan. So I'm 35 years old, and I have congenital cataracts, and I'm farsighted. I'm pretty farsighted, and I have astigmatism in the right eye. The doctors always say that I may or may not be a candidate for LASIK, but the What are the possible side effects of having the cataract removed? And I'm about 2100, 2070 for correction. Is LASIK an option after the cataract removal?
Well, if your congenital cataracts are growing as they would in anyone anyway, people always evolve cataracts over time. But if yours are becoming problematic and your doctor has identified that, then cataract surgery may be helpful to get those lenses out of the way. The point is, we have to, you know, you have to clear the path to let the light in. Your farsightedness and astigmatism can be corrected at the time of cataract surgery by the lens implant that's utilized to replace your natural lens.
Okay.
So these are all interrelated questions, and unfortunately, it's hard for me to answer all of them without having more information. But if the cataract is starting to become more of an issue and the doctor feels that it's something that should be taken care of, I would certainly consider it.
Thank you, Carlo. We're going to take a very, very short break, and then we'll have an extra, extra long time for the last third of the program. Now we're back. That's terrific, and thank you to our wonderful engineering staff. Okay, we've got a lot of people on the line. We want to go fast so that everybody gets a chance. We'll start with Judy in Kingston. Judy, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. My ophthalmologist has diagnosed me with having gray or white flaky material behind my eye. It's known as exfoliation, I believe. And she referred me to a glaucoma specialist who I have seen, and I've had a lot of tests, and I don't have glaucoma right now. I have two questions. What would cause that flaky stuff? And do you think it's inevitable that I will get glaucoma?
Okay. The condition you have is probably the more common form, which is called pseudoexfoliation. I won't go into the difference, but that's the actual title. And what it is, it's the development of this proteinaceous material, this protein material, inside the front chamber of the eye. And what it does is it actually gets into the drain port that allows fluid out. The eye produces fluid internally, and that fluid then drains out through these special meshwork, a special drain, as it were. And what happens is that material can actually clog up the drain over time, which decreases the amount of the fluid flowing out of the eye. The pressure then builds up in the eye, and that pressure over time pushes on the optic nerve and causes that nerve to deteriorate. That is glaucoma. So the secret is to find this if it's the case. And there's a lot of people who have this, and we don't have a good reason for it. It's probably genetic. And what we do in a case like yours is do exactly what's been done. You have testing to make sure that the nerve is still functioning and is structurally intact, and it's watched over time. If,
yeah,
by some chance, the glaucoma starts to develop, they have means of reducing the pressure or of doing other things to save the nerve function so that you may get glaucoma, but you don't necessarily have to lose vision from it if it's followed carefully.
It's a dangerous disease, yes?
It can be. It can be. And you're right. People don't know it's there. So this is one of the reasons to have a good eye exam every so often.
Okay, Judy, thank you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And now on to Otis, Massachusetts, where Patty is standing faithfully by. Patty, you're on.
Good afternoon. I was calling to ask a question about the hard-shaped contacts that are worn at night. My niece used those when she was a teenager, and each night it would just shape her eye enough so she wouldn't have to wear glasses during the day for sports and things like that.
Right.
The reason I'm asking is about me. Because of a medical condition, I sleep on my right side only. So for 20 years, my right side of my face, my right eye, is just like smashed into the pillow, into the bed. And so I'm starting to have vision issues with that eye only, and I'm wondering if that hard corrective contact at night is something that could potentially reshape or protect from the flattening that's happening, you know?
The first question is, have you seen an ophthalmologist to determine why you're having vision problems than I? It might not be anything to do with reshaping of the eye from your sleeping position. So that needs to be ironed out first.
So I do see a doctor for annual exam, and there's no, he checks for glaucoma and cataracts and, all the normal things,
right,
and everything's
fine.
And it's only that eye. And, when I wake up in the morning, it is definitely blurry until like a little bit. It's definitely like the pressure on it. I mean,
well, it may or may not be. What I'm saying, sometimes it has to do with the amount of tears in the eye, how dry the surface of the eye is overnight. There's a lot of reasons. So that needs to be examined by a good ophthalmologist to make sure that there's nothing else going on in that eye. Going back to the contact lens issue, this was something that is still done. There's a controversy about it because the idea here is that if you have a nearsighted eye, the surface, the cornea, is too steep. In other words, it's not a nice normal curve. It's too steep. Almost like imagine a mountain versus just a gentle hill.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that these contact lenses worn overnight will tend to flatten that out so that when you take them off in the morning, the curvature of the surface of the eye is more regular and the nearsightedness is temporarily reduced. And some people can do this, but it does come at some cost to the surface of the eye. The cornea over time can show signs of wear and tear from this. So you have to be watched very carefully. It's usually not advised in older people because your corneas aren't as flexible.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, I go back to the original point. Make sure that someone has looked at you to see why the one eye is having visual difficulties that may have nothing to do with your sleep position.
Okay.
Right.
Sorry about that. We have to let you go. There are a lot of people on the phone, and everybody wants an answer. So, Bob, if it's all right with you, we'll try to keep them answer short. I know how difficult that would be.
We'll try.
Yeah, I know you will, and you've always been great at it. So now let's go to Nancy in Schenectady. Okay, Nancy in Schenectady, you're on.
I guess I should say first that my eyes have been very nearsighted my entire life to the point where I've never been able to drive. On top of that, I have macular degeneration developing. The right eye has gone to the point where I can no longer read with the right eye. I can still read with the left eye, but there is a cataract developing there. I was told that removal of the cataract on the left eye could cause the retina to detach, and so it might not, because if that happens, I might not be able to read anyway with the left eye. I don't know to what extent, if that's anything you're familiar with.
Yes, we deal with this all the time. So first let me tell you that the nearsightedness that you have does put the wall of the eye at some stress. And that makes retinal tears and detachments more likely just in and of itself. The removal of the cataract is a very low-risk operation, but in people who are very nearsighted, there is an increased risk. If the risk is 1 in 10,000 for the normal population, say, it might be 2 or 3 in 10,000 for someone who's very nearsighted. So it's not a huge risk, but it's an increased risk. So you have to put things in relative. And a highly skilled cataract surgeon should evaluate to see your personal risk and advise you as to what to do. But I think that, if the cataract is growing, and it does in everybody, that might be the thing to do to help you to get the maximum vision you can out of your eyes, despite the fact that you're very nearsighted and have weakness of the eye from that.
Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, let's go now to Greg in East Meredith. All right, Greg, your turn.
Hello.
Hello, Greg. Greg? Okay, so here's what Greg wanted to say. He says he's a 60-year-old with two small cataracts, and he's taking nutritional supplements. Do they work?
Cataracts, everyone develops cataracts. The lens in the eye starts to become less clear. Think of a nice clear piece of glass that gradually turns a little discolored and a little hazy, and that continues over time. So everybody gets cataracts. At the age of 60, I would expect him to have some degree of cataract. He takes nutritional supplements, which I'm assuming are vitamins and things that someone has suggested that he do. That helps to round out your diet if you're having dietary issues. In and of itself, it doesn't really have that much of an effect on cataract growth, which is inevitable. Things that are more likely to cause cataract growth are things like smoking, diabetes, blood pressure poorly controlled. So good general health is your best bet, but everyone develops some degree of cataracts and at some point may need to have them removed.
Okay, now we're going to go to Sherry in Schenectady. All right, Sherry in Schenectady, you're on.
Yes. My question is, could I get as much information as you have time for concerning narrow angle glaucoma? What is, as for someone in their 50s, it was discovered back maybe 20 years ago.
Okay. Narrow angle glaucoma is a structural change within the eye where that drain port that I mentioned earlier that lets the fluid out starts to become narrow. Think of it as a little drain deep within an angle, and as that and the drain becomes more and more obstructed by natural changes, for example, cataract growth, and it starts to work less well. As a result, the pressure can start to go up in the eye, and that can lead to glaucoma. So when it's discovered and it needs to be treated, the first thing that's done is a laser treatment that makes an alternative opening in the iris of the eye, in the colored part of the eye, small. You wouldn't detect that it's there. Essentially a painless procedure that's done in the office, and it allows fluid to bypass that angle and allows the pressure to equilibrate more easily inside the eye and prevents an attack of glaucoma, which can happen if that drain port suddenly closes off completely. So if your doctor's detected narrow angles and suggests that laser procedure, I would certainly go forward with that.
The patient did have one treatment with, I believe it was laser. It's for someone in my family. And that seems to have worked. But the heaviness or thickness of the lens that she has to purchase is extremely expensive because of the high, I don't know what you would call it, numbers.
Yeah, if she has a high refractive error, meaning either very nearsighted or farsighted, if the cataracts are getting to the point of needing removal, that will help that process quite a bit by removing the cataract and clearing the path of the light to get into the eye.
Why should it be expensive?
Well, certain lenses are. I don't know why it would be so expensive. Okay. I don't know what
Sherry,
exactly
thanks.
She's
I'll
got.
Let you go. All right, let's go to Wendy in Lanesboro. Wendy in Lanesboro, you're on.
Hi. I hope you are both well. I'm just curious about the blue light effect they said that you have from phones, because I tend to use my phone a lot, and I'm very nearsighted. I hold it up to my face. Am I destroying my eyes with it? That's my one question.
There is concern
then my
about...
other question.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. All answer right. That. That's fine.
There's a lot of concern these days about ultraviolet and even blue light causing damage to metabolic damage, oxidative damage to the macular area, which we talked about earlier as being critical to good vision, that central part of the retina, the macula. Blue lights, screens have a lot of blue lights, and in fact, they're now working on ways of reducing the amount of blue light because of that. But these are things that are of concern. Right now, there's not a lot you can do, but you can limit your screen time and look. And even on iPhones and some of the other smartphones, there are adjustments to reduce the amount of blue light that it throws. So I would certainly work in that direction. But again, having a good eye exam, having your ophthalmologist look at the macular area to make sure that no damage is occurring is a smart move.
Thank you, Wendy. Okay, and now on to on to Anitra in Ellenville. Anitra, you're on.
I'm here. Thank you. So I had an eye exam. I'm 62 years old, and the ophthalmologist said I have a wrinkle in my retina, which is distorting the vision in my left eye. And he said there's a procedure for it, but that I shouldn't get it unless it really bothers me. So it could leave my vision worse than that.
Okay, well,
eye.
Interestingly, we had spoken to a woman earlier who had that procedure done.
Sorry.
What's going on is that the retina, that film in the camera, the back surface of the eye that where the light is focused, has layers. And the surface layer is a thin little laminate membrane that's clear, but in some people starts to, over time, starts to crinkle or wrinkle or pucker. And that can cause some distortion of the underlying cells and make your vision blurry. If it's not blurring, if it's not distorting your vision, best thing to do is just watch it. There are ways that we can watch it and measure it and make sure that it's okay. If it starts to get to that point and surgery is indicated, there is a surgical procedure, but like all surgical procedures, there's risk and it may not be a complete cure. So the best thing to do is observe and treat accordingly.
And will your doctor tell you about that? In other words, do you go to an ophthalmologist?
Yeah, if you go to an ophthalmologist, they have ways of measuring and actually showing you. They can show you a side view of the macula, looking at how thick that membrane is. You can actually see it.
Thank you, Anitra. Okay, now to Travis in Burlington, Vermont. Travis, you're on.
Hello. I'm 37 years old, and I've been dealing with central serous retinopathy for the past 4 years. Mine is an unusual situation. I get it regularly in both eyes. Some of the events did not rectify themselves on the own, so I had to have photodynamic therapy in each eye, and I've also had conventional laser therapy in one of my eyes. I'm going through an event right now. As usual, it's only been a month and a half, so the doctors want to wait and observe before they do any treatment. It's extremely frustrating. I don't take any steroids. I know that's known as a causative factor.
Caffeine?
I do have caffeine, yeah.
That's considered a risk factor also.
So
I'd be careful about that.
Yeah.
You know, just be
Is
careful.
It a strong risk factor?
You know, I know. I don't want to take away your coffee. I'd talk to your ophthalmologist, but a little bit is probably tolerable, but there does seem to be connection, and the connection is not well enough known to know how much is safe and how much isn't.
So, Bob, we're running out of time.
Yeah, so anyway, this is a condition that unfortunately causes swelling of that macular area because of a defect in the layer beneath it that normally keeps the layer dry. I tell people to imagine a carpet sitting on a rubber pad sitting on wet ground. If the padding is intact, the carpet stays dry and flat. When there's little holes that develop in the padding, water leaks through and causes the carpet to swell at that one spot. That's what you have. And the cause of it is unknown. We talk about metabolic treatments to try to improve your nutrition, to cut out certain things that are risk factors like steroids and a lot of caffeine. But it's something that has to be taken care of. Sometimes the hole can be identified on testing in the office, and a laser can be used to seal it. That was the conventional laser. And sometimes we use the photodynamic therapy to cover a wider area to try to get that layer, that padding layer, to work better. And that's the problem. And I'm sorry that you're having this difficulty.
Sorry, Travis. And we'll very quickly, and I mean quickly, go to Linda in Hillsdale. Linda, it's got to be quick or we're not going to make it. Go ahead.
All right. I was diagnosed with macular telangiectasia, and the retina specialist did an anti-VEGF injection.
Right. What you're trying to do here is you're trying to stabilize these blood vessels, which are abnormal and leak easily. And the anti-VEGF injection is intended to try to stabilize those blood vessels and make them less likely to leak. It's the leakage that would then cause the macular area to become distorted and would affect your vision. So it is a considered treatment, but needs to be watched carefully, and those treatments may need to be repeated.
Does it work?
In some cases, it does. I'm not going to say it works in all cases. It's a difficult difficult situation to take care of.
Thank you, Linda.
Should it be done preventively for the other eye?
No. It only works to stabilize blood vessels when they're leaking. It's not recommended that it be done prophylactically.
Okay.
He did show that I have that little cup in the other eye, but it's just not as bad.
It needs to be watched, and I'm sure he'll jump on it if something were to change.
We are out of time. I'm so sorry. And Mike, very quickly, it's the first eye floater, healthy male, no other health conditions. What causes them? And very quickly, because we have no time.
Floaters are caused by a condensation of little protein within the natural gel fluid of the eye. One or two usually isn't a problem. If you've gotten a number of them that have suddenly occurred, especially in the face of flashing lights in your visual or in the peripheral visual field, you need to be looked at to make sure that the retina itself wasn't torn by some movement of that gel.
Uh-huh. Okay, a very quick thank you to Penny and Mary and Maureen. Our apologies, we're out of time. Thank you, Bob Sachs, for joining us today. Underwriting support for WMC comes WMC Heart and Vascular Institute, with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks to Jordan Taylor, our engineer. Calls were answered by Joe Makowicz. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for our news update.